Okay, here is where we are with the pandemic in Massachusetts. According to the latest numbers from the state, the positive test rate is still hovering at 2.2%, with some 675 people in the Commonwealth hospitalized with the virus. There are 170 in intensive care. The last time we saw numbers like that was in April. President Biden has announced a vaccine mandate for all businesses with 100 or more employees, or those employees must submit to weekly testing. And today, Governor Baker is expected to speak with federal officials to get further guidance on COVID-19 third doses, often called boosters, as well as guidance on vaccines for children under 12. School is back, traffic's back, and our questions never left. So call us. Ask the doctors. What do you need to know? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. With us, Dr. Davidson Hamer, infectious diseases physician at Boston Medical Center and a professor of infectious diseases and medicine at the Boston University School of Medicine, and Dr. Gabriela Andujar-Vazquez, an infectious disease physician, associate hospital epidemiologist, and medical director of the COVID-19 vaccination program at Tufts Medical Center. Dr. Hamer, thanks for rejoining us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And Dr. Andujar-Vazquez, thanks to you again, too.
Thank you.
So, Dr. Hamer, I do want to start with the numbers because it seems like we've been holding kind of steady this summer, up and down some, but hovering around a 2% infection rate. A few weeks ago, it was as high as 2.98%. What does that number actually mean? How should we be thinking about it?
I think it's a function of a lot of things, including the number of people that are presenting for testing, the volume of testing being done. And in Massachusetts, now that universities and colleges have reopened and many school systems are doing testing, often pooled testing, and I think that the denominator, the total number of people being tested, is higher. So it really depends on how that figure is analyzed. But that said, you know, I think that if you look at various forms of data, the total number of new positive cases on average over a 7-day period, the proportion positive, the wastewater data at Deer Island, everything suggests we're in a plateau, that we've sort of had a rise since mid-August and then have reached a point where it's not dropping, but it's also not rising any further. And my hope is that that will change for the positive in the coming month. But there are a lot of factors, including, you know, recent Labor Day events and all the schools opening that could tilt it in the other direction.
And Dr. Andujar-Vazquez, that plateau that Dr. Hamer just talked about, what does that mean? When you hear, because you're the expert, when you hear plateau, what do you know? Okay, so that means X is going on. What's going on that we plateau?
Yeah, plateau means good. Things are steady, not rising or lower. We want it to be decreasing, right? I think that we want, our goal would be now to try to continue our recommendations on vaccination, which have helped tremendously our state to be able to push through that surge we had in the summer. And hopefully, even in the setting of opening schools, because of our higher vaccination rates and our mask recommendations and other safety measures, we're able to, in the fall, winter, improve and decrease those numbers along with, you know, respiratory season, other viruses that will be coming up.
We are doing Ask the Doctors, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. There are like 20 things just from those first two answers that I want to follow up on. Dr. Hamer, I think where I'll start is Dr. Andujar-Vazquez just said winter, and I almost broke into a flop sweat because winter was such a terrifying time last year. People went indoors, the weather got colder. There were all kinds of questions about what that would do to the spread, how the virus responded to cold weather versus warm weather. Should winter strike a chill in our hearts? No pun intended there.
Well, it depends on climate change. Sorry, that was back at you with a pun. Generally the fall, winter, early spring are the respiratory virus seasons for many respiratory viruses, and it's a factor of different things influencing the epidemiology, but certainly colder weather, drier air in homes, people being inside more, people having to be closer together. I mean, all these factors increase the potential for spread of respiratory viruses. So I think we need to have some degree of concern, but there's a lot we don't understand about the epidemiology of SARS-CoV-2, and it's sort of come in waves, and I think some of that's been driven by factors beyond climactic seasonal factors. In fact, you know, I think it's, a big part of it's been sort of the susceptibility of the population, and then it, more recently, the impact of vaccination, but also the variants of concern. So it's really hard to predict. It could potentially get worse during the winter, but it also might calm down this fall, and we could have the end of a wave rather than the beginning of a new wave.
Let's go to the phones, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. John's on the line in Boston. John, what's your question?
So I am fully vaccinated with the Moderna vaccine. I have a question. My question is, if I'm in close contact with somebody who tests positive for COVID, do I need to quarantine?
Thank you for that question, Dr. Andujar Vazquez. What are the guidance? What's the guidance from the state?
Right. So the guidance from the state is no. If you're fully vaccinated, you do not have to quarantine. Where it gets a little bit confusing for folks out there is because CDC and DPH do have a little bit of a different guidance. Our state says no quarantine and no testing, just monitor for symptoms. And if you have symptoms, go right away and get tested. CDC, because they, you know, have to talk to make recommendations for different states, right, do say that if you're fully vaccinated, you don't have to quarantine also, but they do recommend testing at day 4 to 6. But our state is no quarantine if you're fully vaccinated, and you just keep monitoring those symptoms and be careful, you know, around other people while you're in that period of exposure.
So, Dr. Hamer, as Dr. Andujar Vazquez was answering that question, I've got a glass wall and I can see into the control room, and eyebrows shot up a little bit in surprise over that state guidance. And then, of course, we hear CDC guidance is a little different. Are you glad that we are particular to the needs of the Commonwealth, or is there a risk that when the guidance is different at the state level than it is at the federal level, that people get frustrated and muddled?
Oh, that's a tough question. I mean, I think, you know, by and large, the state, the Massachusetts Department of Public Health has been following the CDC guidance fairly closely. I mean, there's some minor changes. And yes, I mean, it states are allowed to make their own decisions. Federal guidance is just that. It's guidance. And it's not mandatory. I think there's a need for harmonization, but sometimes in different contexts, it may make sense to have either, you know, stricter guidance or slight variation. So it does become confusing, though.
So let's go back to the phones, 1-800-423-8255. Karen is on the line in Scituate. Karen, what's your question?
Hi. So I'm one of the 14 million people that received the J&J vaccine. And I keep thinking, you know, what about us? I'm not hearing very much in the way of guidance regarding a second shot. So like to hear the doctor's thoughts on that.
So, Dr. Hamer, I'm going to stay with you on that one. And just for listeners, a second shot, because the J&J vaccine was a single-dose vaccine, unlike the two mRNAs where you did a course of two shots. Dr. Hamer.
Well, Karen, that's an important question. It's interesting. The New York Times did a whole piece just on this because so many people said, what about us? We got the J&J. What should we be expecting? And the honest truth is that that vaccine, too, will need a booster. There are different studies that have been going on looking at the duration of the immune response, both antibody production but also cell-mediated immunity. And I think that many of us feel that there's a definite need for a booster with that, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, is it going to be a booster with the same exact vaccine, or are we going to do some vaccine mixing? Does it make more sense to go start with that and then do a messenger RNA vaccine? Because there are some open questions about that, and also open questions about when the optimal time for booster is, I think it's hard to give you advice at this point in time, but more likely than not, at some point in the not-too-distant future, a booster will be recommended for people that have the J&J vaccine also.
Dr. Andujar-Vazquez, let's stay on this question of boosters or third doses. There have been some conflicting messages recently. Pressures from some in Washington on boosters. The Biden administration declared they were coming. There's been pushback about timing from the FDA. And now a group of scientists yesterday came out and said, we don't think people need a third dose. Again, you worry about mixed messaging frustrating people, especially those who may be teetering on the brink about whether or not to get vaccinated in the first place. So which is it? Boosters are going to be necessary or they aren't?
Right. So definitely a lot of conflicting information that can confuse people. But at this time, you know, we know just based on the scientific data that we have for all the three vaccines that are authorized in the U.S. that there is some degree of waning immunity in fully vaccinated individuals for the asymptomatic to mild illness. Right. There's still strong protection against severe illness, hospitalizations, and death against COVID, right? But the timing of when that waning immunity happens in a person that has a good immune system is still unclear. And that's what the CDC and the FDA are trying to unfold with data. And unfortunately, with data, we need time, right, to make those observations. It seems like by knowing other vaccines, that elderly population are more vulnerable for this to happen, right? With time, they seem to have more waning immunity to the vaccine than maybe a healthy individual. And so it's possible that boosters will be recommended, but specific populations where they're more vulnerable to have waning immunity or are vulnerable for different reasons, like healthcare workers that need to be healthy and ready to take care of patients. So I think that's where the middle ground standing, making sure that the timing is right, that the federal government's ready to give those boosters to everyone in the nation, but also making sure that it's with the appropriate science behind it.
And just staying with you for a moment, Dr. Andujar-Vazquez, the FDA on Friday is having a meeting about the Pfizer vaccine, which is fully FDA approved now, and its administration as a booster. What would a decision in one direction or the other mean for people on Friday?
Right. So they're meeting to discuss only Pfizer, which is, as you said, the one that's fully approved. I think that, they will be discussing boosters and whether there are certain populations that would benefit from this. There may be a recommendation coming from them about, based on the data, whether, maybe the elderly population should be that population we should be thinking about boosters in the next couple of weeks. But they will be only discussing Pfizer, not the other two vaccines. But the process is typically that the FDA VRBPAC meets, and then, CDC with ACIP, the Advisory Committee for Immunization Practices, which is the advisory committee for all of our vaccines in the United States that makes recommendations, will be meeting following that. So still, a lot of meetings to happen before we have a clear picture of what will happen with boosters.
1-800-423-8255 to ask your coronavirus and vaccine question. We have Frank on the line in Ayer. Frank, go ahead.
Hi there. My doctor tells me I shouldn't be vaccinated because of immune system deficiency, and I'm looking for a job. Every job I've looked for, they require a vaccination. So I'm asking whether there's some way of boosting my immune system to be able to overcome that. I've heard that probiotics may be good for that, but I know nothing about probiotics.
Thanks for that call, Frank. And Dr. Hamer, I'm going to turn it to you, and I'm also going to acknowledge that you can't provide specific medical advice to a specific person who's not your patient, but let's address Frank's question.
Okay, that's a tough question, Frank. I mean, there are actually medical exemptions allowed for vaccination status by many organizations. And if your doctor feels that whatever the underlying cause of your immune system weakness is such that it can't easily be reversed, then one option would be to get a letter from your doctor saying, I have basically a medical exemption from vaccination. And most organizations would accept that. There are ways to strengthen your immune system, and it really depends on what the underlying cause is. If it's due to a medication, sometimes reducing some of the medications, if that can be done in the context of your underlying disease. I'm not sure probiotics will help, honestly. Having adequate intake of zinc and vitamin D, vitamin A is really important for normal immune function, but I wouldn't necessarily go out and take a lot of that without your doctor's advice. So it's sort of a tough question, but I think that the real key part is having a discussion with your doctor about whether you could get a formal letter stating that you have a medical exemption.
It does seem like Frank's call, in fact, reminds us that that's what a medical exemption is for, and there are accommodations for that. Thanks for that answer, Dr. Hamer. Dr. Andujar-Vazquez, I want to pick up on a thread, something you said earlier, where you talked about vaccines in asymptomatic and mild illness. And I want to pick that up because the numbers in the Commonwealth, 4,750 new cases, 52, I can't seem to get that number out, 4,752 new cases over the weekend. But the daily average of COVID deaths is now 9.4. Now, the record low daily average was 1.1 in July. But I am also mindful that in the spring of last year, for example, April of 2020, we had a record high one day of 250 deaths. Every death is a tragedy, and I make not light of one of them. But we are seeing a significant difference in fatalities. And it feels like as we talk about the Delta variant, we talk about vaccinations, we talk about trends and numbers, it's important to sort of recognize that too.
Absolutely. I think that the vaccines have saved thousands and thousands of lives right now, and there's data showing that. And I said this earlier, we're fortunate that in the Commonwealth, we have higher vaccination rates than in other states, and that have virtually protected a lot of our vulnerable population that would have died otherwise from COVID-19. And even though, you're fully vaccinated and you may pick up asymptomatic infection, that's what the vaccine was produced for. It was produced to avoid severe disease, to avoid hospitalizations, to avoid deaths, and that's exactly what it's been doing. And it's why when you compare our numbers and our surge back in spring of this year and back in fall winter 2020, it's definitely made a difference. And I think we can make more of a difference if we keep our vaccination rates going up, get those primary series doses out there, and making sure that, now that we're going into those cold months, that we're all doing our part to keep everyone safe.
So, Dr. Hamer, Frank called from Maynard. He did not want to stay on the line to ask his question, but it's a good one, and I'm going to bring it to you. It's a two-part question. First, when do we at this date think that vaccines for kids under 12 will be available? And then the second part of his question is, he has a daughter who is an 11 and a half. And I think he is assuming that at 12, you get a bigger dose, an adult dose of the vaccine. If children under 11, or 11 and under, get authorized, should he do it immediately, or should he wait till she turns 12 in the thought that there might be a bigger dose she would get then?
Okay, both of those. I think if I heard correctly, they're planning a review very soon, I think, of the Pfizer data for 5 to 12-year-olds. And that means there's a small chance that we might have approval in the next month or two. Originally I'd been hearing as late as December or January for that. And Dr. Andujar-Vazquez might know more. I'm not sure what the concentration of messenger RNA is that they're using in children under 12 versus 12 and older, so I can't answer that question.
Dr. Andujar-Vazquez, can you?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right, Dr. Hamer. They did move the timeline a couple of weeks, months. We were thinking it was going to be under 12 years of age in January, December, but it seems that they're going to start, at least for Pfizer, reviewing the data in the next couple of weeks, October probably, and we'll make a decision by November. So the question about whether he should give the vaccine, you know, because she's in that between 11.5 to 12, I think that as soon as it becomes available to them, they should just give the vaccine that as recommended. The dose, I'm not sure what dose will end up being. It's very likely that it's based, because it's usually weight based, that it will be similar to the 12 years of age, the dosing for 11 to 10 usually. So I think when we start hitting less than 10, it tends to be a different dose, but that's what I think will happen. So I think that as soon as they get approval and they're under 12 still, that they should get whatever it is recommended.
So it's the same as it was in the spring, which is when you can get a vaccine in your arm, get a vaccine in your arm, full stop.
Right.
So, and I do want to note, Dr. Rochelle Walensky did say yesterday that they are looking at the Pfizer data now. She said that on NBC's Today Show, just to add to what the two of you said. So, Dr. Hamer, I'm going to come back to you, and I want to ask a question about herd immunity. We heard this week that the CDC says that about 75% of American adults have at least one shot in their arms. We know that the Delta variant, heartbreakingly, is ripping through the country. At some point, one would think that between having had COVID and if the majority of those adults follow through and get their doses, and I recognize kids are a question mark, but we are now talking about a time frame for kids under 12 to be vaccinated. Is it time to revisit the question of herd immunity, and is it now something that could happen in the United States?
Well, it's a tough question for a couple reasons. You know, one is that you know, we are starting to see at least some effectiveness studies are suggesting waning immunity because many people are now 6, 7, 8 months out from their initial series. And that has implications for protection against symptomatic infection. And so to really prevent transmission altogether, we need to have a vaccine that prevents both asymptomatic transmission, but also development of symptomatic infections. And the protection of all three of the currently available vaccines has gradually decreased over time. And that may be a factor of time since the primary series, but it also may be a factor that impact of the Delta variant of concern. So I think it's a little hard to say that we'll actually attain herd immunity in the current context. Certainly, if we can get vaccination rates up to 90%, and if it ends up being useful to have a booster, if that strengthens our immunity, we might be in a better, you know, might have a better opportunity to reach that. But otherwise, you know, the problem is that if the vaccine doesn't block transmission altogether, then that makes it harder to attain herd immunity.
Just very briefly in follow-up, because we're almost out of time, does that mean we could be chasing this in waves for a very long time?
Potentially, again, you know, I think that if we end up learning that boosters greatly, you know, sort of strengthen the immune response, it may be that we'll be able to control things, at least in the United States. But we have to vaccinate the rest of the world, or make sure they're vaccinated, because there's going to be this constant risk of reintroduction of potentially new variants of interest and of concern from different parts of the world.
All right. That is Dr. Davidson Hamer, infectious diseases physician at Boston Medical Center and a professor of infectious diseases and medicine at the Boston University School of Medicine, and Dr. Gabriela Andujar-Vazquez, an infectious disease physician, associate hospital epidemiologist, and medical director of the COVID-19 vaccination program at Tufts Medical Center. Thanks, doctors, to both of you for helping us with Ask the Doctors today.
My pleasure. Thank you.